Amanala Owethu. My name is Douglas. This is Honoring the Baobab Tree, Bridging the African Diaspora. This is an experiment in exploration of identity. Identity for anybody who moves through life as a Black or African person. The thing is, we often have little to no knowledge about our traditional cultural heritage and no clue where to begin exploring. We live our lives in societies developed with intrinsic hatred and bias against us, despite our level of assimilation, accomplishment in education, or so-called success in a career. This podcast is for us, for any self-identifying Black or African person. If we move through life with an identity and values, yo, Pierre, hit call one. If we move through life with an identity and values that are foreign and threaten our very existence, we limit our capacity to achieve the possibilities that we are destined for. For those who don't identify as Black or African and are just interested in hearing perspectives, ideas, ways of being that are not given a platform and have been devalued in our society, welcome to you as well. So Pierre, I see you're in the studio. Go ahead, Pierre, hit call one on your screen, the little green button, hit that. So we use a couple of words that we like to, that while we use this language, we want to also give meaning to it and talk about what it means. So, and talking about the diaspora means the dispersion of any people from their original homeland. So I, as a Black person in America, am part of the larger African diaspora. You know, I'm from a people who are dispersed from my original homeland. And there's many different ethnicities and people who are part of diaspora. The Baobab Tree, we call this program Honoring the Baobab Tree. And the Baobab Tree has some significance in West African culture. You know, spiritual significance in the sense that it is the location and space where many people decide to bury their ancestors or bury their elders once they pass on. And it is a way for them to continue that connection with them is by being able to visit the Baobab Tree, which is a central part of the social community. So the social significance of the Baobab Tree is that, you know, it's a place of coming together for the community. It is almost like, in a sense, a place where people come together, connect, talk, exchange information. And also the symbolism of the Baobab Tree. The symbolism of the Baobab Tree is that, it takes place, it grows in the spaces where a lot of times there aren't a lot of resources, there aren't a lot of water, but yet this tree is grown and stays fortified. So I want to welcome our guests. I want to welcome my co-host, Tina. What's up? Tina, are you live? Oh, Tina's not in here. So until Tina gets in here, oh, Tina, there you are. What's up, Tina? Tina, you live?
I'm good. How are y'all doing? I'm
doing well. How about yourself?
Good.
Yo, Pierre, want to go ahead and introduce yourself, Tina? You know, in case we might have listeners, this might be their first episode, so.
Absolutely. So, hello everybody. My name is Tina Okoye. I am the student retention specialist here at Humboldt State University, and I am the co-host for this. I'm really excited to continue this.
Yeah, glad to be here. And this is a production of Humboldt State University. My name is Douglas, and I am the coordinator of the African American Center at HSU. And we have our guest, Pierre. What's up? How you doing, brother?
Greetings, Douglas. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Hi. Nice to meet you, Tina, virtually.
Nice to meet you. Likewise.
Yo, this is super cool that we're getting this together and we're finally here in this space. I know we've been talking about this for a while. So I did my little bit of introduction. Pierre, would you mind, Pierre, just giving us a little bit of introduction about yourself? I met Pierre back in December of 2019. He was at an event at the local library here, and I tapped in, and I was really, really connected with what he was presenting that night. And it was, it impacted myself and, also my family, my young son. And so, so I connected with Pierre. He came back and connected with us for Black Liberation Month in February. Connected with some students and a couple of staff members. And so we also had a really special night that night. And so we're back again, still doing this collaboration thing. So Pierre, go ahead and introduce yourself, brother. Let people know who you are.
Sure. As you said, my name is Pierre, Pierre Chetkin. I am born in Cameroon, with a mother from Ghana. And I am currently finishing my PhD in education. I'm a poet, an artist, a music artist and producer, and also run a small business called Music is Healing, which I'd love to share more about later on tonight. But it's very good to be here. And just to connect back to what you said, Douglas, on the context in which we met, my doctoral research for the last, 10 years has been on, my focus has been on cultural approaches to literacy learning. Mm-hmm. And in particular, I've been looking at the application of drum languages and the talking drums as a tool for early literacy. And so my study focused on working with families and children, learning how to read and write, and using a curriculum that I designed, and a technology that kind of translates rhythm patterns into letters and words and sounds as a vehicle for children to learn how to read and write. So this is kind of the topic here of the diaspora, and honoring the Baobab tree, for me it resonates very strongly, obviously. I was born in Cameroon and I lived there until I was about 10, prior to, traveling beyond the continent. But, in the diaspora is something that I consider myself part of, obviously. I'm here in the United States, but my connection to the continent is still very strong. But my view has always been to connect back, in some ways to give back and get involved once I finish my studies. So I'm glad to be here with you tonight and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah. Yo, I think just the, and Tina, I'm gonna let you jump in, but I think just what you're doing with literacy is just like, it's really powerful, man, because literacy and access to literacy is, it's life changing, right? And especially for our people, especially in this country, reading was taboo, it was illegal, you couldn't do it, and that legacy, like, there's a saying, like I heard somebody say the saying, like, if you put it in a book, you've hid it from black people, right? And a lot of ways, and in some ways that's, there's some cultural tie to that, right? But there's also that there's some societal obstacles that have promoted that idea. But I think on the idea of the being a cultural, us being a oral culture, right? Mm-hmm. So that has a big impact on it as well.
No, you just kind of hit it on the nail. That's actually, I didn't go when I started my studies in the Department of Literacy, Language and Culture. I thought I knew what literacy meant. And it was in the first couple of years of taking classes and learning about the theory and the history of literacy research that I found out that there was this debate between oral cultures and quote-unquote literate cultures, mm-hmm. right? And that somehow oral cultures were somehow deficient because they didn't have this technology of print that allowed for, transmission of knowledge from generation to generation and depended on, the human mediation, which can obscure or thwart knowledge or information, right? Mm-hmm. But this is something that kind of caught my attention at first. I was kind of perplexed, and having grown up on the continent and never really having thought, but from parents who met in the U.S. My parents actually met at Howard University in the 60s, mm-hmm. My brother's from Ghana, my father's from Cameroon, and we grew up bilingual, all of us. I'm the last one of five, and my mother was an English teacher, right? And so I never really thought of myself and my culture and my background as being illiterate.
Right.
But yeah, so that's just to reinforce what you said.
Yeah. I want to jump into your title of the topic tonight, and it's What's in a Name? Preserving Self-Identity Through Creative Praxis. What can you break that down for us? Because I have just that first part of the title, What's in a Name? I have so many personal issues with the name, the naming process with names. And so my personal name. So what does that mean to you? What's in a name? Preserving self-identity through creative praxis.
Yeah, no, thank you actually for bringing that back. I forgot that I wrote that down. But yeah, I think this is the crux of the whole, this has been the part of the crux of the whole thing. For me, you know, being born in Africa and traveling from a very early age beyond the continent, kind of realizing over time the history of not just my, you know, of myself, of my name and how problematic, right? How problematized my name was, right? And because in my culture, in my father's culture, right, there's no such thing as first names, right? So Pierre Valérie, those are French names, right? Those are French names that, but I'm not French. I'm from Cameroon. I was born in Cameroon. And so, I remember growing up, I went to a French, school back home, and I was just kind of confused as to the whole, as to the whole process. I was like, okay, I'm in Cameroon. Why is my name French? And why am I learning the French anthem? You know, and it's not like history was, you know, a lot of people don't understand, you know, especially before the internet and before the explosion of information and all of that, like, certain aspects just weren't discussed. So it's not like, yeah, I mean, obviously you know the history, but it's not like the true history is really taught, right? And you have to dig that for yourself. So just to bring it back to the name, for me, it's been a process of returning to a sense of self, and actually gave that title today because I was, when I wrote that, I was thinking more about my poetry, which is called Dirges of Becoming. And this is a book that I wrote when I did my master's in humanities. And it was a reflective process of really trying to, synthesize sort of my experience growing up abroad and how my sense of self was challenged and forged in that process, and that as an artist, and that the place where I found a way out of this problem that my name and my identity caused, right, when I was the only black kid in the class, or when teachers had problems pronouncing my name, so they would just shorten it, you know. And I'm like, well, that's my whole name is actually this, you know. Like, I don't know who Chet is. I know it's easier for you, but that's not my name. And so, when I took up with writing, I kind of got to this place where I started playing with aliases and pseudonyms and pen names. And so, you know, a lot of people know me as Quay because back in, I think it was in 96 when I finished high school, I decided that I really had to dig deeper into my identity. And so I decided to rename myself. and to take up my part of my grandfather's name, who was called Peter Kwe. Peter Kwe Dagadu, that was his name. And, you know, Peter is Pierre in English. Mm-hmm. And so I just figured, you know, let me just drop the whole French and English connection and just focus on the Kwe part. Mm-hmm. And really, as I reflected on that name and the meaning of it for myself, I found a place of freedom, mm-hmm. right? I found a place of affirmation. Yeah. I found a place of confidence by this process of being able to name myself, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. In terms of, okay, you don't tell me who I am, mm-hmm. I'll tell you who I am, mm-hmm. right? Because that's really the process in which culturally has been approached, right? Mm-hmm. And people have different names based on different groups and associations that they're known. So it becomes very problematic. I could talk about this all day, but that's why I kind of chose that about the title, because there's so much in there. You know, I think yeah. everybody can relate to it, because yeah. then when we connect to the diaspora and the fact that names were stolen and changed and renamed, and people were renamed, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That very naming process, you know, goes back to the power of the word, right? In the beginning was the word. So it starts with the name. Because what you're speaking into existence is what you're manifesting. Yeah. And so if I'm, you know, and I experienced that for myself very tangibly, living, you know, this dual life, you know, like KRS-One said, you know, every black kid lives two or three lives. The city's a jungle, only the strong will survive, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, that was my life, right? I'm making music. I'm with my friends. They know me under a certain identity. I go to school, I go to work, they know me under another identity, and I yeah. find out that when I'm being called by that name, I respond in a different yeah. way. And it became very problematic. Mm-hmm. And I spent many years trying to understand how to really extricate myself from that problem, and it became to really focus on that name that I've given myself and really flesh that out.
Yeah.
Right, as opposed to conforming with my legal identity based on these national ideological power structures that I happen to be born right. under, right?
Right.
So real, yo. It's Tina. I'm gonna let you jump in, Tina.
I'm just absolutely blown away. I personally can also relate a lot to, like, how it does feel when people, for lack of better words, like, colonizers have the nerve to tell you who you are, like, how to say your name, and if it's hard, they shorten it. So I'm Nigerian, my family comes from there, and, growing up, I had a lot of those same issues, like, people couldn't say Okoye, which is my last name, and, like my parents taught me from a very young age, like, if they can say Tchaikovsky, if they can say Schwarzenegger, they can say, like, this isn't hard. Like, and so it resonates with me. So that's why when you talk about how it's so important to take ownership with your own name, I mean, there is a lot of power in that, especially since historically it has been taken away from so many black people. So I just felt all of what you were saying, Pierre or Kwe. I mean, what would you prefer to be called? Because honestly, right. I'm also very cognizant of yeah. that. Like, I want to call you by the name mm-hmm. that you want, mm-hmm. like that you take ownership on, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, no, you could call me Kwe. It's fine.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, great. I've been calling you Pierre the whole time. That's how I met you. I think I've seen it presented. So I've been calling you Pierre the whole time. But yeah, I'm definitely rocking with Clay now. You know.
No, give thanks. And I think this is kind of why I wanted to make this the topic, because it's not just you, Douglas, right? This is my entire, not entire, but for the most part, the dominant part of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, is and this part of why I'm starting this conversation also for myself, continuing it, because I've been working on it on other fronts, but it's been, it's been a task, and I didn't realize just how serious names were.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Until a few years ago, but that's another topic,
so this is something recent for me. I mean, recent, I'll say within the last 5-6 years, really being cognizant of the name, right? And my last name is Smith, which is a straight slave name. It's bothered me. It has weighed on me. It's really bothered me. Again, for the last 5 or 6 years, the last name Smith, and knowing the legacy of that name and where it comes from, right? We all know what Smith is and means, or where it comes from. I've recently stopped acknowledging my last name. So it's all my legal documents. I'm in the process of changing my last name, right?
Wow.
Yeah. I'm in the process of it. It's sort of like you, Quay. It's sort of a journey. I want to name myself appropriately. You know, I don't want to just pick something because it sounds what I want it to sound like. I want it to really be tied to who I am and how I see myself. So the first step in that, part of that is stop acknowledging my last name. So when I print it on something for work, or when I introduce myself to people, I just give them my first name. I give them Douglas. I was going by Doug for a long time. I kind of stopped, cut that out, because that was all about how I saw myself too.
I noticed that on the flyer.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. It's this whole thing. It's a whole wave, y'all. It's a whole wave. No, really. It's like,
I feel you. I feel you. It's a journey.
It's a journey. I'm like, okay, I'm not Doug. I'm not Doug Smith anymore. That's not who I am. Right? And that whole name, that, you know, Doug, even for myself, was like, it was a way of, like, Pierre, how you were saying, when you present yourself differently in different spaces, when people use your a certain name, that was the same thing for me, right? And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm cutting all this out, and part of it, it's a journey. It's this long journey. But yeah, first step really was just like acknowledging that, like, just removing that part of my name from my acknowledgement, because it's like a weight. That name is like a weight. Think about it. It's like Smith, that's your tag. They know who you, what plantation, you belonged to. It's a weight, it's a tag. And I'm cutting that. First thing I want to do is cut it off for my own self, right? For my own well-being. So, yeah, it's real.
Cause I think that's part, I think, of the intentional, changing and obscuring of names, right? Was done intentionally, knowing the power that lies in the name, right? And so in many ways, inflicting a long-term sabotage, right? In terms of people's ability to empower themselves, right? It's gonna be now a process of rediscovery, as opposed to a process of continuation, right? Because there's been that break, and we've all experienced that, For myself, I mean, I still have my last name, but even in terms of these national identities, right? That's another level and layer of it, right? Tina, we're neighbors.
Yeah.
Right? Hi. Cameroon and Nigeria are neighbors. But, back in the day, we might have been, like, from the same nation, right? And so it's really a multi-layered journey, right?
Yeah.
In terms of that, the personal level, the family level, the national level. Of really, reintegration is kind of why I see this as, and it was very interesting, especially when I started doing my research on drum languages, because this then that I realized also something that I never even knew growing up back home, that drum language was so widespread in pre-colonial Africa that we would all have a drum name.
Mm.
Mm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We would all have a rhythm that speaks our name on the drums. Right? And that would be a way that people could communicate with us at distance, send us messages, relay messages if we're traveling, right, and stay connected because there was that system of language and communication that was building on the oral cultural base,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so, in that sense, it's very much a technology of the word, but I digress. But it's just to say that I think as people of African descent, there's a lot of power in the names and there's a lot of power in culture, and that in terms of navigating and this diasporic territory, it's, you know, that's one of the starting places to run in terms of who we are, right?
Right. And that's really the whole purpose of like doing this podcast, is in the sense that like if our identity, our names, again, for a lot of you know, Black Americans, that whole part of our identity, that cultural history is lost, right? And it's not completely gone. It's just we don't know it. Yeah, it's not like it's extinct, but we're not connected with it. And so when we're not connected to that, we fill that void with other identities, other ways of being, other knowledge. And like as I was saying in the introduction, it's that stuff is rooted in ideas that were against us, that are anti-African, anti-Black, right? If we have those identities, right, those values and perspectives, it's hard for us to, like, you know, value ourselves, because all of those mm-hmm. things that we replace our cultural heritage and mm-hmm. cultural knowledge with, they're based on white supremacy, right? For lack of a better description. But yo, Quay, I've used your book a couple of times for as a teaching tool. So it's a great piece of art, man. I really appreciate it. And I've used it. A couple of different platforms with youth, and some community spaces, and
great.
It's connected, and it's relevant even now, man. So Sankofa was one that I read out was in a community event. The other one was, Tina, I'm gonna have to get you a copy of this because it's real, real powerful. It's real.
That's cool. So
Sankofa, and I believe it was, and I've used Born before. And the Orchard. So yeah, yo, this is real powerful. So I've definitely, you know, read through it a couple of times and pulled different things away from it each time. And so you said this was your graduate, graduate degree.
Yeah. So I did a creative thesis, for my master's, in humanities. We had the option of doing a, you know, creative thesis. So this is kind of what I chose to do based from, you know, all the studies that I did during that year. That really much focused on conceptions of the self,
mm-hmm.
and the anatomy of man and certain of those spiritual traditions as well. And just kind of reflecting through the lens of those readings that I did through that year, reflecting on my own experience growing up. And so the book is actually broken down in four moments. It goes as a spiral in the sense that it's cyclical, but each time it comes back at a different vantage point, because it's tracing the cyclical process of becoming that arose from my journey in boarding school when I left home at the age of 10. Mm-hmm. And I was gone for 7 years in this boarding school in France. And in those 7 years, I lived in four different dorms. And so the main four moments in there, the Abbey, the Orchard, the Castle, and the Hermitage, are the names of those dorms in that school where I was, you know, for 7 years. And so it's you know, it's kind of a, there's a lot of that I put in the book, but it was more in this, for me, it was more of a cathartic, therapeutic process. Mm. Again, going back to the fragmentation that I felt after having left that place. You know, I think my family can attest to the years that I spent kind of trying to find myself again. and yeah, so this book really helped in that process because it gave me a place to focus my thoughts and the understanding that I had gained, and then also to just kind of speak from my truest voice, which, you know, is never singular, right? Mm-hmm. It's always evolving. Mm-hmm. It's not frozen. And so that's why it's called Dirges of Becoming, because we're I feel like part of, and this is kind of like the story of the diaspora too, right? It's a story of becoming, and it's not possible. When I went into this program, this master's program, I had one idea in mind, and it was to write a novel. Mm. And the novel was going to be called Return, right? It was just going to be called Return. Mm. And I had this whole idea in my mind of, you know, I think my focus was, okay, how do we return back to our old identities, our culture, our older cultural ways? How do we reclaim our heritage and our legacy? Mm-hmm. And I think by the time I was concluding and actually writing, you know, getting to writing, I got to the, you know, I got to the perspective that return probably wasn't, the return as I was envisioning wasn't probably possible, right? Because history is a constant course.
Right.
And so it's not a process of trying to return back to this idyllic state, but more so in terms of, you know, and that's where the piece Sankofa was really helpful in that turn, right? In terms of really reflecting on the meaning of Sankofa, return and get it. If you want to move forward, return and get your past. Doesn't mean return to the past, and, you know, but understand your past, understand where you've been so that can trace a better course for yourself towards the future, right? And so that's kind of the process a little bit behind some of that piece. But I feel kind of awkward, you know, because I always hate when people talk about poetry instead of just reading.
Yo, do you want to read some? You want to read some?
I feel like maybe I should just maybe read a short piece.
Yeah.
And since we're talking about Sankofa, I'll just read this one right here. Come, dirt suns, birth under sun and heat, feet drumming hurt, pounded on concrete earth, blood running miles, cross lines and generations. Wake up, ye slave nation, failed by kings and playstations, course and trails north of plantation floors. East our source, so move forward, daughters of Luis, Iana, stolen from the golden shores of Ama, may love hold your wings strong with pride, like Zephyr blowing Sankofa.
Yo. Yes. I love this piece. I really love this piece. I read this so many times. I've got it memorized. I'm probably going to end up buying some of these copies for my cultural center and like having them be there and gifting some of these students, because it's powerful what So go ahead, if you want to take the last couple of minutes before we, you know, depart, what if you want to dissect a little bit of that, of that poem that you just read, Sankofa. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh. Well, Sankofa is, for people who don't know, I should probably mention that, is one of the Adinkra symbols, mm-hmm. right? The Adinkra is a symbol system that consists of different visual symbols that have different meanings and proverbs that kind of encapsulate that meaning. And the image of Sankofa is pretty popular. I think a lot of people probably seen it. Is the one?
It's our logo.
The bird. There you go. It's the logo of the show.
Yep.
Which is, I think this is actually, that's the second Sankofa.
Yeah, second one.
That's because there's two Sankofa
symbols.
Yeah, so you have the heart one, almost, mm-hmm. you know, but there's one that's more clearly like a bird, with his head turned towards his back, picking up an egg in his beak.
Mm-hmm.
And the proverb for that is return and fetch it. Right? Mm-hmm. Meaning, as I was saying before, return and fetch your past, right? And so, with this piece, I think it's just kind of speaking to those of us here in the diaspora, right? Dirt sons, birth under sun and heat, right? Children of the continent, but now running miles across lives and generations beyond the continent, mm-hmm. and caught up in as slaves in the nation, you know, where kings are hailed because of their prowess on PlayStations,
mm-hmm.
with Sin City and right. Grand Theft Autos,
mm-hmm. right.
But really speaking to us about who've been stolen from the shores of Ama, right? And Ama is a very common first name or name in Ghana,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and so stolen from the shores of the west coast of Africa, and brought into, you know, daughters of Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
right, brought into places like Virginia and Louisiana, mm-hmm. to toil, right, on plantation floors, right, and so it's a message of strength and of encouragement to learn from the past, to trace back that heritage beyond these current circumstances. And to receive the blow of Zephyr, which is another name for the wind, mm-hmm. right? To receive those messages from the wind that hold our wings strong. And so that there's wisdom in these stories and there's strength in our history and heritage and in our names and our family genealogies and all those processes that help us really see ourselves in a more objective way, I think, as opposed to being subjected or subjects made object,
yeah.
right? In this current right. state, right? Where our names are, it seems like today our names are only to be framed
mm-hmm.
as headlines to breaking news,
mm-hmm.
right? And that should not be. That should not be
right.
what we're the circumstances under which our names are spoken. And so I think it's been a very heavy year, and I think a lot of everything that's happening right now has just kind of brought up a lot for me in terms of things that I was hoping were passing, but I think we're all realizing that there's still a lot of work ahead.
Yeah.
And that we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
We sure do. Yeah, but that work, I think it definitely starts with us looking back so we can move forward. You know, I think it's so key, and I think that's really what the whole premise of this podcast is, and why we, you know, wanted to do this is, you know, to be a launching point, to be a point of, you know, to compel our students who are listeners, student listeners who identify as Black and African to, you know, to do that looking back so we can move forward, because we're, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. Pierre, we're looking for answers right now. We're living in society, and we're looking for answers, and those answers, again, we can't get those answers if we are using identities and values that are foreign to our cultural heritage and who we are as people. And so looking back so we can move forward is just, mm-hmm. that has to be the center of it. That has to be, that's the answer. You know, so we're both the question and mm-hmm. the answer, you know.
Yeah. Definitely. I was going to say, yeah, I think this platform it's become more and more important, especially with this current, you know, social climate, political climate. Like, people need direction and guidance more than ever. And that's why it's just so, I guess it's like a blessing in disguise that, you know, with the pandemic and, you know, just chaos, mm-hmm. We are creating spaces for people to really digest and dissect some of these issues that have a lot to do with identity, and especially Black identity. So
right,
this is just a really great opportunity for that, for at least the conversations to start.
Yep.
Because we need absolutely. That camaraderie more than ever.
Absolutely. I think you hit it right in terms of a blessing in disguise, because I remember for years before the pandemic, you know, at least since 2014, with some very good friends of mine in Texas or in Boston or in Oakland, we've been talking and trying to create these kind of spaces to no avail, mm-hmm. right? Everybody was just so busy running left, running right, no time to really sit and reflect about such asinine things as identity, right? But now, you know, it really is a blessing in disguise, because, you know, I'm really thankful for this space, because I agree that it is what we need, and not just to connect back in time, but also to make those connections in space, mm-hmm. because it's about circulation of these ideas and connecting back to the continent as well, and making connections. So I think this is a very powerful a step forward, and I'm really glad that you know that you're doing this and to be a part of this, because I've been wanting to see to be a part of this and something like this or make something like this happen for a long time. Yeah. So look forward to seeing where it takes us.
Yo, same here. Aww. Tina, Quay, I really appreciate y'all. This is dope. I think this is going to continue as long as HSU is on virtual learning. This podcast is going to be a staple of the cultural center. It's going to be something that we continue to do. And so I'll be, you know, Tina, you'll be here. Quay, I know we're going to have you back on here again soon. So we'll be in connection with you. And Quay, I'm also going to connect with you about how I can get some copies of your book so we can get that distributed around for our students and listeners.
Awesome. Give thanks.
And I was going to say, for just our viewers in general, can you tell us what the title is? I know you said it, but just to, you know, solidify in case people want to, you know, get their own copy or things like that.
Give thanks.
Yep. Yeah, I appreciate y'all. With that, we've reached our time. And so we're going to, you know, we're going to end the show here, but the conversation is not stopping. We'll just pick it up again another day. So I appreciate y'all for your time. I thank you for what you shared, Quay. Tina, thank you again for sharing your insights as well. And until next time.
Of course.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Yes, yeah. Yes. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Blessings.
Peace. Good night.